morning show at East Coast, and here we are on Halloween, and the spirits are getting ready to leave their places as soon as it gets dark. There'll be loads of them out on the street where you live tonight. Now, the science of fright. Yeah, let's take it into the world of science. Why we love to be scared. Well, the cool scientist Sean Duke has been looking at this. We've managed to catch up with Sean on the internet, so apologies for a slight delay over the line, but let's hear what he has to say about the science of fright. Good morning, Sean. Good morning to you. Are you going to be scared tonight?
Going out for a scare with my three kids tonight, Declan. Yes, indeed.
And tell us about the science behind why we like it, even though we don't like it at the same time.
Yeah, it's a strange one, because fear is something that can be, obviously, if it's there for a long time, it can be deeply unpleasant. And some people are unfortunate to have fear disorders. But obviously, there's an enjoyment factor that comes in. And Halloween, essentially, when you think about it, it's an entire holiday devoted to the celebration of fear. And when we're afraid, of course, what happens is that you have this primitive fight or flight response that it's called. And that's essentially something very primitive in us, where we decide, are we going to stand and fight our enemy or run away if it seems like a better option? And you get these chemicals that are released, but these chemicals that are released for that fight or flight, as it's called, are also involved with happiness and excitement. So the whole thing gets mixed together. We get a buzz then from the fear, in the same way that we get a buzz when we're happy or when we're excited. And it can get confusing, because sometimes what some people will find scary, others won't, and it all gets mixed in together. For example, if you are afraid of dogs and you see a dog, then obviously, and you've been bitten by a dog before, then that's going to trigger this massive emotional response in you. And with other people, it's not the same. And where this is all coming from is something called the amygdala, which lies deep in the brain. This is a really old region in the brain that evolved very early in humans. And this is to protect us against threats. And this amygdala is, it reacts instinctively. So it's like one of those meerkats that you see on television, constantly scanning the horizon in these nature programs, looking out for threats and hyper alert. So if this amygdala decides we're under threat, then it releases all these stress hormones, and all these things happen. Our brain becomes hyper alert, our pupils dilate, our breathing accelerates, heart rate and blood pressure increases, and this is all to increase the flow of glucose to our muscles so that we can respond to the threat. But what happens with some people is that our brain overcomes that and says it's not a real threat, and we deal with that and we kind of put it to one side, whereas with other people it continues. And this is the reason why we get, in some people, they're not able to suppress this primitive experience, if you like, and that's what leads to anxiety disorders, OCD, PTSD, all of those things which are deeply unpleasant.
And does that mean that there's a difference in the fear factor we actually feel between entertainment fear and real fear?
Yeah, because the entertainment fear seems to be when we get a fright, but then we're able to overcome it. So you get a fright at the cinema, and then everybody kind of looks at each other afterwards, realizes that it's not a real threat, and everybody kind of laughs, and then you get that enjoyment of the laughter, but also the bonding experience with other people that we've all been frightened together. So that's kind of entertaining. But the real fear is kind of like the fear that you might get if you got off a bus late at night and you're walking home and it's dark and there's nobody around, and then you hear some steps and you think you're being followed, because that feels like a real fear, and that doesn't feel like something that you can easily overcome. So that is deeply unpleasant, and that's going to cause you to react, to run most likely, or to stand and fight. So when you overcome fear, that's where the entertainment and the pleasure comes in, because it makes you feel like you're in control, that you're able to face your fears, laugh at your fears, and that gives you a sense of well-being and being in control.
Right. It's the cool scientist, Sean Duke. Let's leave Halloween. And it's always been a mystery where the final piece of evolution, though I suppose evolution continues all the time, but the transfer so that Homo sapiens ourselves appeared. And the scientists have been looking at this, and you've saw a study, Sean, that's taken us to Botswana in Africa.
Yeah, Botswana. So when I was reading this, I was thinking about Hitler and his Nazis and the Aryan race. So what he didn't realize was that we're all descendant from Africans, which wouldn't have gone down well with them. But in any case, scientists have looked at DNA and they've traced back. They can actually rewind the clock looking at DNA. It's absolutely amazing what they can do now. And they've narrowed down an area that they think was the original home of Homo sapiens, as we're called by the scientists, or humans, around 200,000 years ago, which is very recent compared to the age of the Earth, of course. We're only newcomers. And this area is an area of that was a wetland that covers much of modern Botswana. And essentially, we developed here, they think, because this was like a little oasis surrounded by Africa, very dry African landscape. And people were able to develop here. And the reason that they moved out of the area then, and of course moved into Europe and everywhere, including China and all over the world, was that there was a change in the climate. There was more rain, so then the people were able to move out of their little oasis and follow the vegetation, if you like, that was now growing, and they went north and up to Africa, and then they skipped across the Middle East, and they went out of Africa, if you like. And as they moved north, they became farmers, and as they moved south onto the coastal areas, they became explorers. But, so this area, which is just south of the Zambezi River, was where we lived for the first 70,000 years of our lives, apparently, before we moved out of the area. So that's kind of interesting.
So we're from Africa. Now, there you go. One of the modern habits, of course, in the 20th century was smoking, and that has evolved into e-cigarettes. Well, fruit-flavoured e-cigarettes, according to science, it seems, more likely to be addictive. Tell us the story behind this, Sean, because this has been in the news recently.
I saw this one in the Telegraph, but it's been all over the news. And so teenagers who are starting to use to vape, if you like, if they're using these fruit-flavoured e-cigarettes, they have a greater chance of becoming addicted, according to this study from California, where they looked at 15 to 17-year-olds who tried flavours. You can get vanilla, watermelon, grape, all these kind of vapes. And these ones that were using the flavours, they were 22% more likely to be still vaping 6 months later than the teenagers who are just using traditional tobacco. So if you just smoke in the normal way, it's not as addictive as if you have all of these nice flavors. So I suppose it's like the way we drink alcohol, try and hide the taste, if you like, something similar. So they also vaped more frequently, the ones who were using the flavors. They took more puffs each time they picked up the cigarette. So generally, not good. And Donald Trump, interestingly, in America, has responded, because some of the medics over there are saying that these flavoured e-cigarettes are really bad. So Trump is saying that he's going to ban them due to fears over the risks to children. Also in England, the chief medical officer there in England has also called for a ban. So, we need to take a close look at this, because while we don't know what's the long-term impact of vaping, because we haven't been vaping long enough, certainly the evidence is in these teenagers that if you're using the fruit and candy and non-traditional flavors, that you're more likely to become addicted and to stay vaping for a longer time.
And what are people addicted to when it comes to vaping? We can say there's nicotine in cigarettes, but what are people addicted to when they have these flavored e-cigarettes?
Yeah, well, I suppose it just makes the experience more pleasurable. It's like the difference between having a straight gin and a gin and orange, that, you know, it just, you're getting your nicotine hit, but you're also getting a nice flavor. So it's just adding another sensory experience to it to make it more pleasurable, I think.
Right, okay, so the jury out as regards whether they are safe or not, because not enough time has elapsed, but they're certainly in the news. Sean, are you dressing up as a witch or a ghoul or something tonight when the people of where you live, are they going to see a different side of Sean Duke tonight?
Yeah, they might see me in a clown mask, although the little kids are terrified of clowns. If you go around with a clown mask and a red balloon, you know, apparently that's really scary. But I think that might be a bit cruel, so I might just wear the mask, not carry the balloon.
All right, Sean Duke, the cool scientist. And you can look up Sean's writings at sciencespinning.com. Thanks very much indeed to Sean.